The Bank of England warns that the United Kingdom is expected to fall into its longest recession since records began in the 1920s. Energy and food prices are soaring, and inflation has reached double digits, rising to a scale that's not been seen in 40 years. And to top off a crumbling economy, the country has been dealing with major political turmoil. The UK has seen three prime ministers in the last 3 months. So what does this mean for the future of the UK? And what will the cost be to the most vulnerable in society? Joining me to discuss this is William Davis. He's professor in political economy at Goldsmiths, University of London, where he's also the co-director of the Political Economy Research Center. Thank you for joining me on Upfront. As we just mentioned, the state of the UK economy is in shambles. The economist Matt Klein, analyzing what's happening right now, even said, take out Greater London and the UK is one of the poorest countries in Western Europe. Would it be safe to say that the UK is no longer a major economic player in the world?
Well, by conventional indicators such as GDP the overall size of the economy, of course, the UK remains one of the major economic players, and the City of London certainly is one of the major financial centres in the world. I think the real problem the UK has had, really dating back to the global financial crisis of 2008, is it seems to have a deep inability to generate prosperity from across its regions, but also a serious inability to create the forms of jobs and the forms of employment and the forms of business which are actually wealth creating. A GDP per head is not very impressive. And the overall effect of this is the UK finds it harder and harder to actually deliver the standard of living that many people expect from what by other measures is a highly developed country. So this has become manifest in increasingly threadbare public services, rising child poverty levels, some scandalous examples of people living in conditions that the UK would not that long ago have considered to be a sort of shameful instances belonging to sort of, you know, second tier economic nations. So by so many social measures, certainly, and also by measures of productivity growth and business investment, the UK is failing badly. It's just that it also has a very long history of generating opportunities for rent extraction by financial services and this sort of thing.
How does that translate into actual conditions on the ground? You talked about them almost being that of a second-tier economic nation. How are people experiencing that, and are they pessimistic about the future because of it?
Younger generations have been amongst the greatest sufferers from all of this, but younger generations have, and graduates have found it increasingly hard to get into the sorts of jobs with the sorts of prospects that they consider to be sort of, you know, would have been considered normal in the 1980s and 1990s. But there is also, I think, sort of signs emerging now of some really acute forms of poverty. I mean, there was a recent case in Rochdale in northern England of a two-year-old boy who died from the fact that there was such extensive mold in his parents' flat that this effectively led to a respiratory illness that killed this two-year-old boy. And this Wow. inquiry recently reported on this. And this was seen as a real sort of wake-up call about what kind of society are we building here, where people, purely because of they lack the means of their own to actually to improve their conditions, but also under conditions where the cost of housing has become absolutely terrible. I mean, rents are currently rising very, very quickly, and house prices are now finally beginning to fall. But the cost of living crisis that we hear a lot about internationally at the moment has been kind of accumulating. But I think for many young people, they'd say, you know, we've been living with this for a long time. When you've got people living in a, you know...
Let's talk a little bit about responses to these high prices. Inflation in general, right, is a problem. And economists generally say, if inflation is high, what do? You raise interest rates. The Bank of England has been doing just that. Interest rates have been going up. But it seems, based on all indices, that a continued rise could be devastating for just about everybody except the wealthiest people in society. We're also hearing that as winter approaches, over 1 million people in the UK will be forced into poverty. Can anything be done to prevent a looming, not just economic crisis, but a broader social crisis for everybody just about? It's certainly the most vulnerable Britons.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, these interest rate rises, which many people have pointed out, it will raise unemployment, to a level where effectively prices start to stabilize because expectations of the of future inflation start to fall. I mean, so yes, these interest rate rises will certainly make it harder for mortgage holders to meet their the costs on a monthly basis. We've also seen these massively spiraling energy prices connected particularly to the war in Ukraine. And the government has now reluctantly started to explore various forms of windfall tax on the energy companies in, on the basis that they're making these kind of supernormal profits at the moment. And of course, that could make have a major impact if that money can be redistributed. I mean, amongst the major crises at the moment is you've got a lot of people who are in work, and some of them are doing work on which the rest of society depends, such as, you know, nursing, teaching assistants, driving ambulances, and this sort of thing. And these people's monthly wage is not enough for them to survive. And these people are using food banks, and these people are not able to stay in their own in the homes in which they've been living, and this sort of thing. So, I mean, there's a kind of urgent issue, which is how to get more money into some of these people's pockets. And there have been some, I mean, ironically,
what,
although
I was going to say, what is the answer to that? Radical, I mean, yes, at some point, expanding the welfare state has to be part of the solution. Windfall taxes on these
energy, right. And
yeah. Windfall taxes on these corporations is part of the answer in terms of revenue generation. But what are the other ways to get there that also don't further destabilize the economy?
Well, I mean, the trade unions are mobilizing quite actively at the moment, and they're mobilizing because they're saying that in a period of 10 or 11% inflation, you know, all of our members, their wages are falling year on year at the moment. And that is having some effect. There are some victories being won in certain areas of things like the rail workers. And at the moment, recently, there's been talk of strikes by nurses. And, you know, they will get some gains from this industrial action. But I think, yes, ultimately, I mean, one of the sort of crimes, really, of the last 12 years under successive conservative governments, in my view, has been particularly slashing public spending from areas such as local government in the UK. And local government delivers some of the most essential services. I mean, we basically have an extremely centralized political system, but the allocation of resources for things like children's services and the services which keep children safe from harm and social care, which is what looks after elderly people, helps, you know, elderly people who can't wash themselves and this sort of thing. We've now got local councils which are saying we're in danger of declaring ourselves bankrupt. And then no one knows at that point what happens. I mean, there has to be some kind of bailout from the central government, but they have no real tax raising powers like they would do in the United States, or they have no capacity to borrow money from the market. So at a certain point, fiscal policy, that is taxation and spending, really has to jump into some of these situations in order to prevent sort of emergencies. But of course, this is exactly what the Bank of England is cautioning against. And this is exactly what led to the you know, the kind of standoff between Liz Truss's 44-day reign as Prime Minister and the Bank of England. Although, of course, the kinds of fiscal enlargement that she was looking for was heavily skewed towards the rich. I mean, regardless of the risk of inflation, there has to be some carefully targeted interventions to prevent some sort of really serious emergencies, I think, in relation to some of these problems of social care.
Earlier this month, former Bank of England official Michael Saunders said the UK economy as a whole has been permanently damaged by Brexit. If we hadn't had Brexit, we probably wouldn't be talking about an austerity budget. How much of the current economic crisis has been exacerbated by Brexit?
Well, the economic indicators are now pretty overwhelming now on this. I mean, one of the most important indicators on this is the rate of business investment. The growth in business investment roughly tracks that of Germany and France up to 2016. And it then effectively fell off a cliff after 2016, which is the time of the referendum on Brexit. Exports from the UK have fallen drastically as a result of Brexit. The European Union was by far the biggest trade partner of the UK up until Brexit was finally achieved by Boris Johnson in 2020. And it's unsurprisingly, there is now all sorts of blockages and paperwork and inefficiencies that have entered the UK economy there. So, I mean, the damage to the UK economy, according to these quite sort of conventional indicators, is overwhelming.
Well, you know, to that extent, Professor, you know, there are many people who have argued that the solution is just to return to the EU, rejoin the EU. There are polls that suggest that. There are protests in the streets demanding this. Certainly, it's more complicated than that. But ultimately, is there a way to repair the damage that has been done by Brexit so that we could ultimately see the kind of economic stability and prosperity for everyone that you'd like to see?
I think the problem at the moment, and it's true that, you know, there is now a significant lead in the polls showing people, the people who believe Brexit was a mistake, now significantly outnumber those who believe that it was a good idea. I think no politician for quite a long time will, no frontline politician will demand that we return to the EU because, I mean, and unfortunately it's become a sort of untouchable topic for many politicians, I think partly because of the still outsized power of the newspapers in UK society. The newspapers on balance are very pro-Brexit and they sort of retain this kind of quite sort of nationalistic line that the European Union is the enemy in some way. And I think that this has led a lot of sort of politicians to live in fear of ever kind of reopening this debate. But I think that whether some better kind of trade agreement could be hatched with the European Union, I'm sure that there could be one, and it could also mean rejoining some of the other tiers of European integration, such as the single market and the customs union, both of which, you know, could have remained in the single market or the customs union after 2016, and still left the European Union in its political constitutional form. That, because of the power of the political right of the Conservative Party, rapidly became an impossibility over the course of 2016, 2017, because effectively there were various figures within the Conservative Party who vetoed that as an option.
Professor Davis, thank you so much for joining me on Upfront.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, that is our show. Upfront, we'll be back next week.